angle.
But he can be provocative in that way.
But I can't. I mean, political commentators. I mean, we should tell you that Mick's and commentators' corner tonight. Review.
Good. I hope they've got that.
They just slagged us.
Somebody tweet that off there.
But I mean, do you not accept that it's their opinion? Opinion is subjective. The likes of Alex, Brian Feeney, all those kind of characters who write columns in the paper and do stuff on TV. In a sense, they're informing the public of how they interpret the ideas.
Yeah, but except I don't think they do that. First and foremost, it's not clear that it is their opinion that they're giving and not a fact.
Is it not pretty clear when they talk? I don't mean you can chip in here as
they're
well.
They're not challenged on what they say. Whereas if Basil was on the view and he said something, he'd be challenged by who was on with it. But if Alex was to say something, there wouldn't necessarily be the same back.
But quite often the other commentator will either agree with them or say, no, I don't agree, that's something else.
It depends very much on who it is.
Yeah.
I mean, is it their last to speak?
So if I can challenge it, is it slightly sour grapes because they're never going to speak on for MI21 or for modern opinion?
No, you see, the great position that I'm in now is that I have freedom to speak and to say whatever it is that I like. Having had the year that I've had and having had the implosion that happened, it gives you a sort of freedom to come along and say, this is what you need to know. Now, it doesn't. I'm not saying that I'm not going to do things differently in the future and that we're going to more, but I will tell you, this is the real problem, that political commentary is not engaging with people. And there are a number of issues, of which the one that you've highlighted is just one of them. Mm-hmm. But somebody needs to challenge people when they say, this is what I think, by saying, yeah, but that's only what you think. On what basis is that, or how did that would be the scrutiny that I would be under if I was up against a professional broadcast interviewer? And they aren't.
And you'd like them to have a bit more pushback?
Well, I'd like the pushback, and frankly, I'd also like some new ones. I'd like, you get people coming around. You want to get a pitch for people. If you're after opinions, make it clear this is your opinion. You know, have a focus group or do something like that, or get people around and have a chat. But this bit where if you put them on BBC or some other programme, it looks like this is a BBC commentator talking to another BBC commentator, particularly if they're regulars.
You think that the regular thing makes it?
Well,
part of the furniture.
It's only part of it. It just gets you do give people a certain cachet because you are speaking on things. And I'm not saying people shouldn't have a cachet. I just need to say it needs to be clear what role are you playing. I am putting out here my opinion, which may represent only what I personally think. That's okay, put your opinion out. That's what you get when you ask the man on the street. Mm-hmm. But that's not what you're getting in our current position.
The way most people in Northern Ireland consume their politics is through mass media such as newspaper broadcasts, and things like Nolan, which, as you say, is light entertainment. Nolan devotes an awful lot of broadcast time to the average person. How much broadcast time does the view or the issue contribute to what the man on the street thinks? Which is just as valid as what Alex Kane thinks. No offence to Alex, but I think having the actual electorate's opinion shared is just as valid, if not slightly more, than hearing the same opinion shared from the same people. Is there something to be said for maybe the view showing impartiality, for having a nominee who are friends be in a commentator's corner this week? Have a mastermind big black chair where...
But would people, I mean, from a broadcast point of view, would people work?
But if I can come in, the point where I think that you need to be going to is... It is difficult for the public to be totally informed on every single issue that's going to come in front of them. Frankly, they've got other things to do with their lives. But we could do with a different grouping of people coming forward, people that are informed or semi-professional or even professional, that have got a platform such as you have at Twitter that can ask the right questions. And I think that's what's missing, is there's not the challenge function that comes along. I mean, nobody likes it. I mean, even when Alan was coming to talk, at the meeting that we're talking about, I mean, he didn't miss me much. You know, he gave me a fair few shots, and you have to be on your game to go do it. But you can only do that if you're informed or if you're at the meeting or whatever. And I actually think you have the possibility as Twitterati, whatever name you want to call yourselves, but there is a bit where these people do not, you don't want to trifle with them. And I'll give you one last point just to show you what it looks like. Today in DCA, which is the smallest committee around, we were talking, there were only five of us in the committee, and we were talking about budget cuts. And it's on TV, and it's great, but nobody would have seen it. Somebody needs to pick it up and say, this is what this means. But it's real incisive questioning and saying, you don't really have a clue what you're doing in DCAL or anywhere else for that matter, do you? You pick that up, you'll get people interested, but you need to be looking at it.
Just to go back, sorry. You said that your regional public exchange doesn't have time to be educated on the internet.
Not on everything.
Yeah, but is that not a pretty strong argument for having an expert commentator who is educated on education to come on and talk about?
But I see, education is a little bit too broad.
Sorry, that is an example. Say,
I would like to see anybody in this room actually on its takes and interest to come along and say, let's go and make some incisive questions. I'd also like it peer reviewed. You know, I'd also like everybody right here sitting saying, well, what do you ask that for or whatever. You know, that's the way that things work. Somebody that has taken the time to ask the right questions will find out something.
Isn't that your job, though, as somebody on the scrutiny committee, that you are being employed full time to actually make those observations and then people pick up on them?
Yeah.
So if you're getting the airtime in the committee, that's where you should come in, on social media and spread the word about it.
Okay.
Nobody's listening to me asking the question. I'm not getting a good answer in this thing. You have more people following you than...
Okay, so I can do that. The problem is maybe for me it's viewed as being either partisan or maybe there's some issues because of things that happen.
It's not your money, it's your job.
No, I do it. And many other people do it in that committee.
Not aware of anyone who does it.
Yeah. So I can tell you, you can sit and watch the DCAL proceedings of today and you'll see on exactly the same subject. Most people just want to make a little speech. They tell you how it goes. It goes, that was an excellent presentation. Thank you very much. And we have a lot to do with you and our constituency. And I'd just like to thank you very much for your contribution. End of. It's just a let's be friends with anybody that might give us a vote. Somebody that votes to account, you go, I don't like that. But that's what my job is to do. And frankly, that's what I do at the moment. That's where I have got some real value. And I think that maybe other people should be either illuminating those people that are doing it, rewarding good behaviour, or if they're not doing it, saying, why are you asking these questions? And I just want to give an example. I'm sure you all saw it today. The horrendous news about the air crash, that was the co-pilot. And I think it was... might have been on the floor down here, but there was some commentator that they were asking, and they had an expert in who was explaining to you just the way it happened, that you can't get through the door because of this, you can't do this. He was an expert in getting through doors in aircraft, you know, and obviously could. That was precisely the person you want to hear so someone could explain, oh yes, this is the way it is. Where you get a problem is where somebody takes their knowledge. This is the point Adam's just made, I think. That takes their expert status and then proffers their opinion, because there's no dividing line that says, you know, this is... So if the person that was giving this advice on aircraft happened to be a previous employee of Boeing and said, and of course this would never have happened in a Boeing aircraft, you know, you would just have followed on and said, well, that was true, so this must be true. So what I'm looking for is how you have informed debate, because my experience of the public is in a very few minutes you can explain everything to them. They get it. They need to be engaged in the topic, and they need to get something. Is that important? That's it. Once they know it's important, once they've allowed it to, then actually they make up their mind in the balance of probabilities, but they are not getting that. And I think we need a new generation to come through, and I do see the news, the broadcasters, trying to find more and more people to come on and be like the opinion people, but they can't get people, right? They can't get people to come on and offer these opinions. But you as a class should be considering doing that role, and you need to be protective of your own personal brand. You need to understand that people are very sensitive. If you look as if you are partisan in any shape or form, people don't mind you being partisan, but they do colour what else it is that you say as if you're a partisan. So if someone come and talk to me, if I think that you are somebody from another camp, I will be reticent to explain my position fully. If I think you're friendly, then I may be a bit more expansive because I know it'll be treated nicely. Actually, I don't think you need either. What you need is straight down the middle, fair comment, incisive journalism, and you have a platform to do it that people are starting to listen. But the big challenge that you have probably, I didn't actually mention this in the speech, but probably is you can engage people, but you have not yet changed people's minds. But that's what you'll do with your brands. And I would love to see a bigger brand coming out, but anyway, individual brands will do it. So you are the champions that the people need.
We've kind of slightly hijacked you, because we should welcome Mick, who has managed to get off the nomadic.
Did he hear what I said about Slugger?
Even the mighty Slugger has lost something of its va-va-voom. It's become a playground of trolls, party hacks and innocents. It's watched for sure, but its influence and does it have a real clout? I guess kind of you were probably want to talk that over. That was one of the things I was going to ask you about. Oh. But there are only two things just why we borrowed your time and making you stand up. But I guess if we can do that, you suggested that you'd have a big reduction in the number of MLAs, but have much larger constituencies, which is something in your naughty corner, Stephen, like you from the Greens would say, you know, you want democracy to be as local as possible so that people are connected with the people that they're doing, that actually you've a much, if you're an independent or kind of a small person, then you're kind of falling into that camp really. But it's much harder to get in, if you were trying to get in across Lisburn, Dromore, Banbridge, and kind of a bit of ours, you'd really struggle. Whereas, because you would end up with a bigger personality somewhere that kind of steal the boats, make a coated weapon, and get harder, it's actually easier to get smaller people in with smaller constituencies.
Well,
I just want to tease out.
You can play the numbers. You could go down, this is not quite like a summer bigger than the others, but just with simple maths, say you went down to, instead of having 18 constituencies, you only had 11 super councils. Mm-hmm. It doesn't quite work because of Belfast being
so
big.
So going way beyond what the Boundary Commission had suggested was 16.
Well, if you came down, just match them with your councils. And you said, I tell you what though, 6 times 11 is 66. It's a huge reduction. But maybe that's too much. Let's do 7 times 11. Mm-hmm. Or let's do 8 times 11. You would still be down to 88 compared to 108. But because you're taking 8 from a wider variety, you wouldn't get this what I call 5-1 constituencies, which is 5 nationalists, 1 unionist, or vice versa. You have a broader range, and therefore people have to reach out beyond local constituency issues. And this is really...
But it's all politics, not local.
Yeah, but Northern Ireland is pretty local. You could even go to one stage of saying, listen, we just need one big constituency called Northern Ireland, and just you all stand up there and go and vote.
You do that for the European election?
Yeah, you can do all sorts of things. You can turn around and you can say things like, should we have recall on our things? Should we have none of the above? Should we have any of these things? My point to you was, as people that lead opinion, and people are clearly dissatisfied with a system that does not and will not work ever, but no one can come forward with some form of alternative that says, well, how can you do it? Now, remember, you can't just start with a blank piece of paper, because the incumbents will go, I'm sorry, but we're keeping this.
Yes,
you
know,
But you can turn around for the general public. I'm only giving it as my suggestion. You come up with your own, but my suggestion is, yeah, let's reduce the number of MLAs per place, because it's quite obvious that in certain areas there's too many of them. Certainly, there's not enough breadth in terms of their experience. You know, not enough engineers, not enough women, not enough.
What's the advantage of this? Because MLAs are actually, despite MLAs are very cheap.
We now, it seems to me, we're settled into a certain kind of politics with the DUP and Sinn Féin incumbency. Mm.
Yeah.
And this isn't a question against that incumbency, but what, if anything, is going to trigger transformative politics? What's going to change from the sort of passive incumbency that we've got at the moment, where nothing much is actually getting done? Although I notice that's beginning to change with austerity coming down the track, because people are having to trim budgets.
So let me make a very simple prediction for you. Because the answer to your second question is financial implosion. Here are the simple numbers. 50% of our budget is health. Our people are old and growing older. The demand on our health budget goes up by 6% each year. Our resources go up by 1%. Each year we are 5% further behind. The pressure to try and keep health afloat, that is to say at the same level as England and Wales, is exercising the body politic. But because they will not make decisions, they will not fix it. Because health is in such a trauma, it has a knock-on effect for decal, for justice, for DRD, for everything else. Basically, this boat won't float. And the financial implosion will change it and take it down. And if you look to England or look to Dublin to try and fix it, they don't have the money. So that's what's going to change it, and that's what they can't fix. So that's what will come back in. Now, you turn around and you say, what is the alternative? At the moment, there is no alternative, so we just keep putting sticking plasters on. And all I was saying is, I absolutely take your point about we're settled down into this system that we're in. We won't be able to change the system, so we need to find a cleverer way of nudging the system into the right place. And all I've said is, here is a way that I think you can do it by changing the electoral rules. So here's what Liam Donaldson, who's the Chief Medical Officer of England, said when he came and did his report. He said, no region of this size with this population can afford 7 hospitals. You have to close hospitals. And Jim Wells, the current minister, stood up and said, I absolutely agree with Liam Donaldson, we're going to have to go and do something. But by the way, wasn't it a great rally in Downpatrick where we had 15,000 people out saying, save the Down? Now, nobody is making the argument, and Olive's here, and I even have this argument with Olive occasionally, nobody is making the argument that what you should be trying to protect is services, not establishments. But you want the best possible care, but that's a hard argument to make to the population. Just to finish that, because the population will go, listen, all I know is you've spent a lot of money building the Down Hospital, or Lagan Valley for that matter. It's here, why don't you use it? It doesn't make sense to me that you don't use it. Nobody's making that argument, and Jim Wells is not brave enough to stand up and say it. And I have to tell you, the one thing that Peter Robinson and I agreed on is it's too big an issue for any individual MLA to do it. It has to be a body politic that says not 7, but 3.
So with an electoral assembly in 15 months' time, and with Lagan Valley in your constituency,
I already told you, no MLA is going to stand up and say, I want to close.
You just joined the list of 108 MLAs, so you won't actually say that there's a possibility. Okay, we may not expect you to say that my local hospital is the one to close, but it's hardly going to become an A21 policy that, or is it, that you would say that actually we should have 2 or 3 super hospitals that may not include the ones in the areas in which
we're actually,
and services
actually,
would be better?
It could be a policy. And the question I then ask you, would everybody here rip into me and say, McCrae wants to close Lagan Valley? Because all of my politician colleagues in Lagan Valley would certainly say that. Or does somebody turn around and say, do you know what? We know, the public know that they need to have better services. The reason for Lagan Valley's predicament is because it is 7 minutes from the Royal Victoria Hospital. If you have a major trauma, the advice is to go to the major, to go to the A&E. Now, there is a future for Lagan Valley. It is an elective surgery. It is to do with orthopaedics and all sorts of other issues and these things, but you do have to explain it to people, and that takes time. And at the moment, the people are going, we're not listening, you know, because they're fed up. We fight everything. We fight the closure of schools, even though our educational budget is very extended. You know, we insist in having 7, I think, different types of education. It's really expensive. You need to understand, if you're spending on that, you're not spending something else. So whether it is schools, police stations, hospitals, pharmacies, banks, post offices, anything. People do not want to see their services reduced. Understandably so. What you have to explain to them, and this is a tricky thing, is when you look at it in the round, there are better solutions that ultimately, when it happens, people think it's great. We had a huge discussion at one stage about what would happen to Lisburn whenever we built, you know, Sprucefield.
My last question really was around, and I know Adam was it was, at the beginning you talked about, you talked quite a lot about social media and the effect of it, and the, I guess it was very easy for people to kind of take a hit, and you talked about defamation and things. Does the outbreak of social media and the fact that it's so prevalent and it's in everybody's hand and everybody can be a troll if they really choose to be, does that change politics? Does that change what a politician does, says, thinks through, is perceived as? Is there a, because you're kind of one of the, there's a few politicians up in the Hill and a few in Westminster that have kind of got the sharp end of it more than the rest, so you're in a good position to comment.
So what I look at now, and you'll see this more coming out, is that we've had to start to give people the broadcast qualities that they expect elsewhere. So it's not enough just to do, I've got my little video coming up here, look at me, you know, with Vine or whatever. But then there's a place for that. But people,
so that's like tonight, somebody sitting down there, I assume, has been kind of tweeting out the pictures of things that went along with your speech.
Yeah.
Which was quite neat for a kind of public tweet up that you had some pre-prepared images. That's the professionalisation of
We'll do that, and what you're sitting doing is that I'm sitting here with a recording. I don't know if it's switched on, but I'm sitting recording. You're the backup of last resort. If all else fails, Alan will got it. But the reason for that, as you know, Alan, is it's to do with quality of sound, that people want to hear what you have to say. And it's also true that a certain amount of editing goes through, because you do a lot of ums and ahs and things in live talks that maybe you want to put out. But the point that I looked at is, and I'm interested to find out, we do analysis. Whenever we post the videos, which we're doing now on Facebook, you can tell really definitively how many people look at your video. And actually, it's usually disappointing, you know, because you see 1.4k views, 37 actually looked at the video. So that does tell me certain things. The benefit, the opportunity, I think, for you all here, is that we're on the threshold, we're just not there yet. People in this room will come forward as being the personality that people listen to, rather than the current title that they might be working for or whatever. There'll be a threshold that breaks through. So it's not, my answer to your questions, it's not there yet, but if you ask me, will it be there in 5 years or 10 years, definitely in 10, probably in 5, it will come through. It just isn't there yet.
I just wondered what I was really wondering was the immediacy of social media and the fact that people can hijack you. I mean, you could get hijacked tonight,
yeah,
but we wouldn't even know because we're talking and we're not looking at our phones. Does that change what you go to and what you say and who you associate with? Does that change a politician's kind of work? Because so much more is either on the record or accidentally on the record when somebody puts it on, and it's hard to tell what's truthful and what's not. I could be tweeting things if you're not saying.
Sure.
And only these people could actually say no. You could have said that Lagan Valley was going to close under your watch.
Yeah. Except, of course, I do have a recording to make sure that you don't.
Testing.
Well, that's just wrecked it now. Yeah, just wrecked it. But actually, that's what it does. One of the things I think that we would assume now, you get to the stage where you have to accept that almost any conversation you have with anybody, the chances are it could be recorded. So even when you think you're having a quiet chat over a drink or whatever it is, we live in this world. I mean, we've just seen it happen with the Tory candidate,
yes,
in
Malcolm Rifkin. Oh, well, I'm thinking of Rifkin and the other guy.
But I was actually thinking of Basil, or of the guy,
yes,
in. But I mean, he's recorded by, I mean, who knows what he said or why he said it and all this. But this is what makes life difficult. Now, our challenge, therefore, is you've got to be a wee bit more circumspect about who you engage with and how you engage with them. But if you don't engage, you know, like, I mean, and you were saying at the start of this that I've been relatively quiet.
Hibernation?
Actually, I've been active. It's just nobody has noticed me wandering around. I'm like the man with the invisible cloak. You know, nobody sees me coming or going. But that's okay, because there's a time and a place for everything. But it does give you a chance to reflect and to see what you should do. So the reason why I actually came and made my great revelation to the world and top of all 12 of you, that...
Oh, for the tape, I count more than 12.
Yeah, that's
what I said. Sorry,
the bar staff have been listening. We'll answer questions later.
But the reason why you come along is because I sense a change in attitude with the public throughout the whole of the Western democracies. People are worried about all sorts of things. They would like their opinion to be heard, and yet they know that on their own it's difficult to do it. But the great thing about social media is the ability to bring people that share an opinion, even though they might be geographically separated or separated some other way, to bring them together, to give them some sort of critical mass. You know, this, and you might look at, you know, the gay lobby would be one of the things that really benefited from that, that people were individually sort of saying, can I come out and say what I really think or what I really am? Actually, what happens is you get it out into the mainstream of the discussion, and suddenly it's not a problem, but it was a problem before. And I actually think that's where we're looking at with social media. It's an empowering thing for democracy and for citizenships, but you cannot do it without leadership. And who are the leaders? For better or worse, you are. You know, you're it. And, you know, in terms of finishing up for me, what happens to me, I mean, I've made my contribution as best I can. I put my observations out. Some of it will be right and some of it will not be right. But you try and push the argument further forward. The real thing is that the argument must go forward. And if we want to have a different type of politics to the ones that we have now, you're not going to get the change coming from the existing politicians or the existing political parties. It will come from democratisation, and that's what social media does. And as I said, the only thing you have to be careful about, I just reiterate it, is you've got to be fair, impartial and decisive, and not defame anybody.
Difficulty is you don't have to be impartial. There's no Ofcom licence or broadcasting code for people who aren't broadcast.
You don't have to be.
Some of us blog from an impartial point of view. I'm sitting at the fence, and I guess it's kind of quite itchy up there. But others are definitely going to come from a particular angle, and that's their thing. You know, they're
okay.
So
let me concede that point to you.
My MLA has just conceded a point. My sixth of my MLAs.
So it is a fair point that you make, that not everybody is in the role of trying to be impartial.
Yeah.
But the argument that I've been trying to develop tonight has been that if we want social media as an entity to grow, my belief is that the role it can fulfil in society is being the expert interviewer that's not part of existing media corporations. And if you're going to go down that route, in that bit, I think you need to be impartial and incisive or whatever. I do understand that there's another role for people that says, no, I'm NI21's press officer, and what I'm getting out is what NI21 is, or I'm Sinn Féin, or whatever, or I'm the GAA, or whatever. And obviously that is coming from a different thing to inform and trying to do, but that is not growing the democratisation of the electorate through social media. That's my point.
We should thank you for coming, because we kind of, you were
last choice. I know, that's
there were 107 no's. Actually, there were 106, because Marcin did come earlier. We also didn't bring you here to ask you lots of questions, so thank you for doing that. And we didn't get you here to kind of announce your kind of Westminster and Assembly campaign. But we should kind of ask, when will we hear? Do you have a date, roughly, when we should look out for more news from NI21 in terms of your plans for growth, shrinkage, or whatever happens next?
Do you have my number?
Yeah, but you stopped answering my texts about 6 months ago.
All right, well, I'll tell you why later. But anyway, but you have my number,
and
you will know. You will. You will know. You will know.
Don't tweet that.
Exactly. Put that out. So all I do is make you this promise. Is that you will know when the right time to phone me is. You will know. I guarantee. And one guarantee that I'll give you is I'll take your call.
You'll take my call.
So well, anyway. You know, so that's all I can say on that. But you will call, and you will be interested.
Okay. Thank you for that.